Welcome, everybody, to the Aaron's High Cap Adventure Radio Program, Facebook Live Edition, here with Father John at St. Luke's, singular, not plural, or possessive, church in Temple, Texas. And now you see, I didn't do my proper equipment check. I thought I did, but the volume was coming up. So we know it's working. We know my phone is working. So here's the deal.
Amen.
Every Saturday from 9 to noon on KMIL 105.1 FM, also at KRXT 98.5 FM, we have a great radio show. And Father John will be coming on soon. I'll have to check the calendar again. I'll post it out there. But right now, in between those times, we get to speak with him right here at the church. And it's always a great time, great conversation, and I learn a lot. Father John, how are you?
I am well. I am well. Thank you for asking. Still celebrating the resurrection, sixth week of Easter. Too special to celebrate for one day. We celebrated for weeks until Pentecost. And, you know, I probably gained 20 pounds in celebrating because everybody's got food. Last night we had tres leches.
Yeah, how do you stay in shape? Because I remember everybody just brings food. There's never a shortage of food when it comes to you being a priest.
So we always tell there's many issues in the priesthood, but starvation ain't one of them. Ay, padrecito, you need to eat. They come to the ladies come to the door with bags of those little takeout styrofoam takeout bags. It's for you and Father Vincent. Okay, okay. You have to beat them up. Sometimes I'll take one bite and throw the rest of it out so I can say it was great.
That's great. I mean, it gets to a point where you can't eat it all. I understand that.
And it's all sugar and carbs.
And you got to stay in shape. Do you go to the gym or anything?
I do have a gym across the street.
So you do what, T3?
T3. But I got to stay covered up because, you know, all the old ladies there, they start gawking at me. It's pretty embarrassing. Scandalous, even. Scandalous.
Crazy. Well, John, I came here with a thought.
A thought?
And that's a rarity.
Okay.
And I wanted to ask you, correct me, stop me when I'm wrong, and that is God gives us three answers, and those answers are...
When we ask a question.
Okay.
Yeah, sometimes he brings this thing that we didn't ask.
Well, let's just say we're not sure what to do.
Yeah, I hear.
So
yeah. It's
either no, he's going to give you definite signs. Yes, I guess you'll have a total peace in the heart about it. And then wait. And the reason I'm bringing this up is how do you determine the yes and the wait? And the example I would give is Moses crossing the Red Sea. Mm-hmm. He said, just lift your arms up, dry us. We'll split the water. Joshua, he's crossing the Jordan. Get your priests to put their feet in the water. I'll dam it up. So how do you know, whereas compared to them just trying to do it themselves and saying, okay, this is how he wants to go.
Well, when God asked the Israelites to attack the Amalekites or Ammonites, whatever they were, and they were too big. You know, said, no, trust in me. So I think, I can only speak from experience. Any decision you're not sure about, first thing is you bring to prayer and community. That's the first. And those around you bring to prayer and community.
Can you clarify community?
Yeah, so for me, it's the priests and leaders here at the church, people who are having the most interest and the most at stake. But you always look for consensus. And sometimes when you're discussing things with other people, it manifests, as they say, we really shouldn't do this. I'll give you an example. I was in Waco, and we had bought a whole building. And I didn't know what to do with it. People had plans to turn it into something. Other people were like, let's turn it into a school. Other people were like, let's tear it down. So I said, let's just open it up. And I'm not sure what to do. And so we had the community come. And then suddenly it just kind of came out in consensus. Tear the thing down. And let's use it for something else. And it was a relief for me. Because God wants to speak through the community. He wants to speak through it.
I got a problem with that.
Yeah.
And the problem is, I'm very selective who I hang around.
Yeah.
Because I do not want to be swayed with bad information or bad thought. So a consensus scares me. Mm-hmm. It should be more precise, I would think.
See, that's the hard part. So a consensus, if it's in line, as Catholics, we have Mother Church to guide us. And, you know, I know what's out of bounds. You know, let's tear it down and let's build an abortion mill. No, well, that's not. But the church provides guidelines, and then we're making a decision. Bring this to the Lord. And what does that mean? So consensus that is both peaceful and manifest. Now, sometimes in my own group, sometimes there's a consensus, like, I have to overrule it. No, we're not doing that. No, we're not doing that. And in the Catholic Church, we can do that. But they can go over my head. But if I can talk, there was a few times, and one time in the seminary, I wasn't sure I even wanted to stay anymore. Those were years of scandal, and we had guys were leaving, and I was not excited about this, and I didn't know, should I stay or leave? And I remember one of the spiritual directors said, you know, when it really got down to it, I don't know what I'm going to do. I have to make a decision. And they said, you know what? Do the Ignatian way. Decide you're going to stay for a week. Just decide you're going to stay. Pray. Decide you're going to stay. And then next week, decide you're going to go. Decide you're going to go. Just decide. So we went through that week. All right, I'm going to stay. I've told them I'm just going to stay. And then at the end of the week, I couldn't make myself decide to leave. I couldn't do it. And they said, well, pay attention to that. Pay attention. God speaks to others. He sometimes speaks through your emotions, your logic. You bring all that discernment in, and you test the spirits. Sometimes it takes time. If you're seeking right counsel, prayer, sacraments, and you still don't have an answer, you don't do anything. You still wait. And as I mentioned, in today's gospel, when Jesus says, you know, it is farewell, spare farewell speeches in John 14, 15. He says, so much I want to tell you, but I can't because you couldn't handle it right now. You couldn't handle it right now. Partly that's an invitation to keep moving. Can you trust in me? Do you have to hear what's going to happen? I'd rather you just keep following me. Do you trust in me? And then when you look back, you're glad you trusted. It's that song, I'm glad I didn't know. Yeah. I'm glad I didn't know. Because it gave me a chance to keep moving forward. We walk by faith and not by sight. Jesus, I trust in you. You know, sometimes it's like we were teaching our eighth graders how to dance. You know, how to dance with a girl. But you have to teach the girls how to follow. And sometimes the girls want to do this. They want to look over their shoulder. And what are they telling their partner? I don't trust you. So either trust him or don't dance with him. And that just takes a lot of trust for an eighth grade girl to trust him. Dim-witted eighth-grade boy who doesn't know what he's doing. And then we could see them, the girls were trying to know, let him lead. And he may even, like when we used to go to seminary, some guys would leave. And the priest would always say, God has called you to the seminary. He may have not called you to priesthood. He may not have called you that, but he's called you here because he's still doing something with you.
Do you believe in coincidence?
Probably not. No, I'm not a coincidence guy. I don't think anything happens by coincidence.
Yeah, I used to be that. Well, that's a coincidence, just because I didn't think about it. But the more I speak to him, talk to him, he talks to me. There's nothing coincidence, because he'll take every little thing and make it for good. I was going to say, let's say you know yes or not yet, mm-hmm. and you make a mistake in the decision process. He's going to make that decision turn to good.
Right? Yeah.
He'll
give you a choice, and even if you make the wrong choice, he can still do stuff with it.
Right.
He can still do it, but he still has to give you a choice. And it's amazing what he can do with our bad choices, and our mistakes, and even people we have hurt. Even then, you know, God can do things. You know, he'd rather us trust in him, and because he wants us to be happy. He wants us to be happy. Now, he does allow us, when we're cocky and self-centered, to fail, to fall flat on our face, which is always good for us. The hardest lessons are lessons in humility.
Wasn't that Nebuchadnezzar?
Nebuchadnezzar,
where he's on the patio, he goes, look what I've created, and instantaneously he's...
Didn't go well for him.
Didn't go well.
No.
He was warned, and he did it. And so I make a special effort to proclaim it's because of him, not me. Anything I have succeeded in, anything like that, is because he allowed it to happen. And man, I don't want to get cocky. I don't want
to
get...
And he even allows you to fail, and even uses that. Like when we go door to door, sometimes we get cussed out. And that's good for us, because it builds up humility. It does, and you just take it. And sometimes people have been hurt. And you know what else? And you know what else? And you just sit there and, I'm sorry that happened. I'm sorry that happened. But that's also good for us. So, you know, when you pray for humility, you have to be very careful, because sometimes He answers that prayer, which is always a dangerous prayer. You know, anytime you say, "Lord, I want, what? How can I serve you?" That's a dangerous prayer, because He usually answers that, and then you like have to do it.
I prayed for patience.
Oh, there you.
Big mistake.
Big mistake.
Big mistake.
Yeah, He'll give
that
you.
That was 30 something years ago, and I'm still feeling the pains of that one.
Yeah, pray for, because He wants to make you holy. We're called to, Mother Teresa said, we're called to be faithful, not successful. People who are successful have their own issues. You know, speaking about successful, I don't know why this popped in my head, but I don't play chess, right? I don't play chess. But people who are grandmasters at chess now, they have their own community. To be very careful, because like for like 10 years in a row, I can't remember, I saw this documentary, how many chess players went over the edge. Like the best chess players in the world became depressed, you know, contemplated suicide. They became the best in the world.
There's nowhere else to go.
Well, they thought they could figure out everything. Everything. So the more successful you are, the more you have to be prayerful, humble. Yeah, those two things, prayerful and humble, because then you put yourself in danger. The higher you are, the farther you can fall. And we know that, you know, when you become, in the priesthood, when a man becomes a rock star priest, like, he's always under attack. There's nothing the devil likes more than to take someone down and scandalize the whole community. Yeah. So I don't know if that answers your question, but I can tell you that I've had some heavy decisions in my life, and sometimes when you make a decision, like, yeah, I know people who didn't know whether they should quit a job, and they went ahead and quit, and they felt, well, I should have done this a long time ago. I've fired people. Have you ever fired someone? That's hard. And you want to make a deal, you want to try, and then when you actually do it, sign the paper, and you let them go, you think, oh, the whole world looks different. Wow, I should have done this a long time ago. But it's because you don't want to hurt people.
I get situations where I'm really concerned that I make the proper decision. And I'll pray about it, I'll think about it, meditate on it, and all of a sudden, one of two things happens. One of three things. I get a conviction that, no, don't do this. Mm-hmm. Or I get a calm, a peace on it, and I go. Or I get an understanding, not yet.
Yeah.
And I've been working that out a lot better lately.
And actually what you said, you pay attention to those, most of the time, you pay attention to that all of a sudden, that feeling of peace and excitement about the future. And excitement, well, things are going to get better. Just when you were talking, I can hear, it's one of the signs of suicide. If someone is absolutely depressed, contemplating suicide, right before they'll do it, they'll seem happy.
Because they made the decision.
They made the decision. They see the end is coming. And that's a warning. What's the matter? Have you made some plans? What's the matter? Are you looking forward to the future? No. Now they have me to push around again. Now you got a problem. But for the most part, when we are seeking to do right by God and us and the church, and then we make a decision, and then there's an overflowing of peace, you know, that's our reward. God says, no, see this? You made a hard decision. And now you have confirmation. Having said that, there have been one or two times in my life I decided to enter into like a contract or a relationship, and the moment I was in it, like, that was a mistake. That was a mistake. And you can either continue in it, like we've had people.
But you go backwards on the decision and looking at your thought process is how you got there?
So it's usually an inward conviction. That was a mistake. Now we have some people around here, sometimes they've been dating a long time, and they'll go ahead, and get engaged, and you can tell they ain't excited. Like, I guess I gotta do this. Yeah.
Been together long enough.
And we've been a long time, and I guess we'll go again. I said, look at his face. I said, look at his face. Does he look excited about this? You don't have to do this.
You know who Sam Kinison is?
Yeah, I've heard that, yeah.
He goes, hey, come here, man. You're going to get married? I want you to look at this face. And he starts going, ah! That's what it's going to be like when you get married. Ah!
He's past, hasn't he? Yeah, yeah. But if there's a sense of peace and joy and resound, okay, now, I've got a change in my life. Let's do that. That happened when I remember when I got accepted to the seminary and was about to enter in. I was full of smiles. I couldn't wait to go. There were other guys who came, you could tell, like, they were not happy. They were hoping that there would change. And by the same token, I've seen men who broke down crying when they took their vows to become married. Fine, they just loved being, couldn't wait to get married. Then there are other guys, you can tell, what's the matter, man? You okay? You okay?
Where's the door?
One guy in Bryan, I'll just say it was in Bryan, Texas. We were doing an exchange of vows, and he wouldn't say them. He said, I, Doug, take you. Come on, man, you got to say it. It was awkward and hard. Come on, man. And he wouldn't look at her. He was like looking off. He said, no, you have to look at her. Now he strudged through, and I felt bad for him. I said, we should have caught this. One time in Waco, there was a bride and groom, and the priest could tell something was wrong. He turned off his microphone and said, listen, if you don't want to do this, we don't have to. And the bride goes, you know what? I can't do this. And walked out the side door.
Wow.
And the priest just said, we will not be having a mass here today. You're all free to go home. And, you know, it's
chatter.
And they just sit there. And then the groom just walks off, you know. Even though you don't want to do that, but they may have dodged a cannon.
That's right.
Because once it gets on the train, the train gets going, and yeah.
I was at a wedding not too long ago, and the groom was up there waiting for the bride, and there was problems in the back. And
yeah,
I said, and it took a little bit longer. It was kind of awkward. I said, what'd you do? Change your mind? And some people heard me. And I go, I'm just kidding, man. I'm just kidding. So you got to be careful what you say at a wedding.
So I got another story about that. I did a wedding in Dallas. It's a young couple. They look like they're 18, 19, but they were in their mid-20s. They're both small and cute, look like two kids. Anyway, during the rehearsal, the groom walks off and hides in the sacristy and locks the door. For an hour, he was in there. And the bride just went back and was like, and his brother, the best man, talked him out. And he went through the ceremony. They didn't last a couple of years. They were divorced. But I should have said, you know, if you're not sure, not only shouldn't we do this, I don't think I can do this. Because you're feeling forced. This has to be free. But you're feeling stressed not to do this. Well, pay attention to that. No, I'll just do it. Let's just go ahead and do it.
I'll brave myself through it.
That is, can you imagine how she must have felt?
Either one, but what about the guy standing there when she walks off to the left, left? All the money spent, all the time.
See, that's why we meet with couples here. I'm glad you brought this up. We meet with couples here. They want to set a date. They want to set a date. Well, wait, there's a couple meetings we have to have. Well, can you pencil us in? I get that all the time. Can you just pencil us in July 3rd? No. No, we're not going to pencil you in. Because I did that once. A woman came in, or a father, somebody said, could you pencil my daughter in for January? I said, why don't we have to see her? Can you just put it in pencil just to save the date? As soon as we did that, save the date, invitations go out, the hall is rented, they're getting the dress, they come see us, there's a problem. Like one of them has been married before, or they've had a legal prenup. These are all impediments. Well, we already got the hall. I said, no one told you to do that. I didn't tell you to do that. Because somebody came in and it wasn't good. Hold up. We're not. Whenever you make a permanent, lifelong decision, it involves. That's why weddings would always involve the community. Does anybody here have a problem with these two getting married? That used to be, you had to get married with the consent of the community. Now you can, marry your car if you want.
In the Catholic faith, though, if somebody's been married before, or if somebody's got a prenuptial, can you explain that a little bit?
Okay, so that's an impediment. If they've been married before, we have to investigate. Jesus says, if you divorce your wife and marry another, you commit adultery. If you marry a divorced woman, you commit adultery. He says it over and over again. So we have to look at this. What happened? Are they dead? Was it through the judge? You know, we have to investigate. Maybe they're somewhere waiting for them to come back. Frank, I know I'm going to take off some Frank Sinatra fans. Frank Sinatra was Catholic, and he married a girl. She became Catholic. He left her for his girlfriend. Got a divorce. He wanted an annulment. Hey, okay, whoa. And then they checked on his ex-wife, and he's like, she's like, I'm here. He left me. I'm waiting. How dare you annul this marriage? Good point. How dare you do that? Because sometimes you find out. That's why it has to be investigated. Where's your former spouse? Oh, they moved on. Now we have to try to contact them. We can't just take your word for it. So then
if you're married and divorced and married again, how do you get over that once you find out the exact details of the divorce? How do you get over that?
How do you get over it? What do you mean?
And can they get married in the Catholic Church?
Sometimes they can, sometimes they can't. And let's say they're already, here's where it gets really interesting. Let's say they're already living together. Maybe they already have a kid. So this happened in Houston. You want to hear my crazy story about Houston?
Tell me about Houston.
Crazy story about Houston. So a man and a woman got married, had a son. They got divorced. He married another woman. They had a daughter. These two got legally married, half brother and sister. Whoa. Which is illegal in Texas. But they just lied. They have a son and they have a baby. So the priest is working with them, and he asked us, how do you solve that? How do you solve that? Well, they can't get married in the church, and they have to be living as brother and sister. And then he said, what if they're sitting in your front pew with their 3-year-old son? So they came up with a solution, but it's not easy. It always involves sacrifice. Move away, live as brother and sister, and don't tell the kid. Because you have sometimes impossible situations. But sometimes the only way to solve these impossible situations is they have to live. What did St. Paul said this? If a husband and wife are divorced, what should they do? They should reconcile. What if they cannot reconcile? They should live as single people. But people now don't want that. They want to get remarried. They want to get what Jesus said. In the beginning, it was not so. That's the biggest, that's why we lost the whole country of England over a divorce with Henry and his wives. Because we believe what God has joined together, let no man put asunder. Do we believe that or not? Is it permanent? We believe marriage is indissoluble. It's permanent. But the world now doesn't believe that. Luther didn't believe that. Henry VIII sure didn't believe that. And most Protestants don't think of marriage as a sacrament anymore. It's just, you know, it's like you're graduating. We'll enter into a contract. If you don't do your side, I don't do my side. We'll just move on. But we think of it as a covenant. That's why someone gets married.
Now, does that only happen if somebody gets married in the Catholic Church? What if somebody not familiar with the faith gets married, gets divorced, then they become Catholic, and then we get married in the church?
We have to annul that first marriage. Because we recognize that as valid, even if they don't. So let's say you have a man, two Methodists get married. This doesn't work out, you know? We don't like each other anymore. And then he marries another Methodist. You know, second wedding. She wants to become Catholic. In the church's eyes, she's living with another man, another woman's husband. So she wants to become, she needs to get right with this. So we have to go annul this marriage and then have to marry them in the church. Now,
how do you annul this marriage?
We have to investigate it. We need documents. You have to testify that this, because what they're saying is that first marriage is not valid. Okay? We have to, how do you, you're just going to say it? Just like with a divorce. Some of you have been divorced, but if you're divorced, the civil government dissolves your marriage. What? Sacramental marriage, the church has to recognize it as not being real. So, yeah, with marriage, we take marriage real seriously. We're the only ones that do that, but like I said, we lost.
The competition down the street. They don't do that aspect of it.
No, they don't. You can get married as much as you want. Marriage and divorce is like getting a job. Hey, it didn't work out. You know. Even though our bodies came together in one union. But if you look at Jesus, was pretty forceful on this one. We can't talk about that. But you still haven't asked me what's on my mind, though.
You know, I was just thinking about that. Father John, what's on your mind?
How much time we got?
Oh, let's see.
Okay. So, I've been thinking about used car salesmen. Do you know a used car salesman?
Do I know one? Yes.
They're fascinating people. Now, they're both fascinating and aggravating. My cousin owns a used car dealership. He owns a couple of them. But, you know, they are taught in a certain way. Now, they use technology and the internet and all that kind of stuff to sell cars. But people of faith, Christians, if we want to spread the faith, I think we should take a few lessons from used car salesmen. Because Paul does that today in the readings. Anyway, when someone comes on their lot, they got about a minute to get on. And how you doing? What kind of car you want? No, they go, how you doing? How you feeling? You get to know them and they try to find common ground. Where are you from? Where'd you go to school? What's your name? And then they can strike up a conversation. Like when we go door to door.
You know, Father John, it all depends where you come from. Down here in Texas, okay. Up in New York, it's like, hey, get away from me. Hey, and then the salesman will go, you going to buy this car or not? Well,
see,
I got all day.
See, and that's, I'm not sure that's a great thing, because I think we could learn something from good ones who want to make a sale. It's all about relationships now. You know, like with women, it's all emotional. To sell someone a car, you have to make, it's all emotional. No one can afford a car. They can't. But you have to make them believe that this car is going to change your life. You know, you have to be excited about it. It's really going to be, oh, sure, I'll pay $500 a month for the rest of my life. I mean, who's going to enter in that kind of thing? That's a new car.
Well, when you get married, you're paying three times that amount every month.
You give your whole life. Oh, yeah. You give your whole, and your whole body. And your whole, oh my gosh. Anyway, so, but you know, you look, like when we go door to door, sometimes some of us don't want to talk to us. We had one guy, and he goes, hey, you in the military? You could see by his shirt that he was in the military. He goes, well, what? And one of our guys was in the Army. Well, you know this. Military guys, they love to talk about that share experience. Okay, where were you? Where were you stationed? The next thing you know, a relationship happens. It leads to a deeper relationship where we can start to share the faith. Now, this morning we read from Acts 14, anyway, where Paul, the Roman, is wandering around Greece, you know, he's running around Athens, looking at all the shrines of their Greek gods. But he sees a altar to an unknown god. And then he goes, that's my inn. That's my inn. He goes, starts talking to the Athenians. Hey, I know that you are very religious. And I even saw that you have a shrine to an unknown god. And so they're like, oh, he knows us a little bit. He saw the shrine. And let me tell you about this god that you don't know. Now, it didn't work with most of the people he was talking to, but it worked with like three of them. We even have their names. It worked with like three of them. And we can learn from that, because if we, you know, if we can enter into, you know, conversations, common ground relationships, you know, even, I don't know if you're familiar with this new movement out there, this new abortion, anti-abortion movement. If they're called Abolitionist Rising. Have you heard of them?
No.
Yeah, so they don't say they're pro-life.
Everybody's saying IG, by the way.
Oh. They think we should just abolish abortion from the get-go. Abortionists and women should be tried for murder. I mean, they're that serious about it. Because they don't believe in incremental, you know. Pro-life people want to maybe make it illegal and then punish the abortionist, but not necessarily the girl. He goes, no, that it's murder, we shouldn't do it. Anyway, but he's on campuses. He goes on campus with these signs of aborted fetuses, and he just enters into conversation. And even though he's pretty direct and sometimes he gets heated, he always tries to find common ground. So you agree that we shouldn't hurt other people. He always goes back to rape. He believes we should have the death penalty. Those guys in the Abolitionist Rising are for the death penalty when it comes to those kind of things. He goes, but you believe that rape should be illegal. Why? Because you're hurting another people. I agree. So he starts with like all these agreement statements. I agree. You're hurting another person. You shouldn't do that. It's a violation of their human rights. Get him to say yes like three or four times. Okay. Well, there's certain humans, unborn humans, who've done nothing. Should we protect them? And then now the other person has to deal with that, but the ground has already been set. They've already agreed on something, so it's kind of, I agree with you. I think you're right, 100%, 100% I agree with you. So that endears them. This is what used car salesmen do. They butter you up. You know, say, you're looking good today. Oh, I agree, too. I'm a big, they see you're a Cubs fan, or, you know, a Dallas, oh, I'm a big fan, you know, even though that might not be true. You know, I shopped there, where'd you get this? Oh, that's, you look great. You know, they try to have three or four positive, uniting, what they call tenderizing statements. We tenderize it. Now when it's tenderized, now you can marinate it. I think Christians can do a better job instead of just walking up to people. I've seen this happen to me. I'll be at some function and there's some Protestant Christians there. If you were to die now, would you go, come on, man.
They're going to walk away.
They're trying to trap you. They're hoping that you'll say, I hope I go to heaven. Oh, now that they walk you down the Roman road. I said, this is not successful. This is not, you've taken people off. I said, good to meet you. You go to school here. Where are you from? And get some real, do you believe in Jesus? Yes. Okay. We're on our way. Do you believe in sin? Oh, yeah, I struggle with sin.
You know, it's worked for me a lot of times. Somebody will ask me a question, and I go, well, which answer do you want? They go, what do you mean? Do you want the flesh answer, or do you want my faith answer? And they go, they almost every time I say, your faith answer.
Yeah.
Don't you find that interesting?
I never heard that.
What, the way I put it?
Yeah, but that's. I think it's effective.
It is.
What I do is, I do two things. I said, do you want the long answer or the short answer? And someone will ask me, what made you want to become a priest? Well, how much time do you have? I mean, that's more. Tell me your favorite thing about being a priest. Okay, I can do that. What's hard or what's? Well, tell us your conversion story.
Father John, you know how you were saying you want to get common ground.
Common ground, yeah.
The reason I say what I say about do you want the flesh answer or this?
Yeah.
The common ground is I know what you're feeling. Mm-hmm. I've been there. I've had those feelings and thoughts, so I can talk to you that way. But let me tell you what I found out. I know how you feel. I felt the same way. Here's what I found out.
Inclinations and temptations. Yeah, like if a teenage boy says, I found this girl. I think I want to be with her for the rest of my life. I know you do. I understand that oxytocin, dopamine, and vasopressin are flowing in your brain.
Yeah.
Your brain's not fully formed yet. Well, you don't understand. She's it. Now, what I think we should start doing now with technology is go ahead and videotape them saying that.
Oh, no.
And put it in memory.
No. I want to go away. Delete.
But we have technology now because we know so much. But we had to learn the hard way. You know, kids can just grab the phone and just ask the phone. I mean, they have all the answers now, but in some ways...
It's not good in some ways.
Some ways, they're dumber. I mean, all you have to do is watch all these riots on these college campuses. What are y'all doing?
You'll get an instantaneous answer, but it won't become ingrained into your...
Where did you learn this? They're up at these universities complaining about something having 4,000 miles that they know nothing about. Meanwhile, people around here are struggling. I just went to Bush's Chicken. And I got the smallest snack pack you can get.
Uh-huh.
$11.
No way.
I said, what? What happened? You used to get a snack pack for like $3.
$3 to $5.
Yeah. $10.66, my friend.
Wow.
I said, what happened here? We're getting inflated.
Well,
like
you want the short answer or you want the long answer?
But, you know, we're not paying attention to the squeakiest wheel. So we have these other strange things. You know, and even at these protests, you can't help but wonder, how come these people don't have jobs? Who's funding all this?
Those are the people behind the curtain. That's who I always talk about, the ones in the shadows. They've got an agenda and they manipulate the ones who think they're fighting a great cause, but they've been so twisted in their head, they don't know what they're doing.
And I used to think it became like from a groundswell, a movement. No, there are millionaires who are under... funding rebellion.
Yes.
I mean, whoever I always thought when I was a kid, like Democrats, Republicans, I always thought like leftist hippies were poor people and the other side were a bunch of rich, you know, tycoons. No, man, these tycoons are in on it. I had no idea they were in on it. It's everybody in the middle that has to pay the price. The kid trying to get the class who actually paid tuition.
Don't get me started. Who actually that's good for a Saturday show. Right?
Actually paid tuition. All of you are here for free on something. Full price and trying to get them. They can't because somebody's mad about genocide. Do you know what genocide? Look, you're here. We're in Colombia. When I was in San Diego, I went to San Diego. There was something. The hotel was fancy, but it was icky. I pulled up my phone. We were surrounded by, I want to say, 6 or 8 Planned Parenthoods. That's genocide. I said, the genocide is going on around us. Not to Hamas halfway around the world, and it doesn't make no sense to me. But I don't know how I got on that shtick.
We're going all over the place.
I know.
Okay, Father John, these adult books that are in kids' schools' libraries. Okay.
A pornographic book, you mean?
Pornographic books.
Yeah.
I just lost my train of thought where I was going to go with that.
These adult books you were talking about, how they got in there.
How they got in there.
So who's putting them in there?
Who's putting them,
what's the agenda?
Right, exactly. But that's as far as I can remember. So we'll change
that. No, because these kids have these books. I would call adult books Shakespeare, Aquinas, Aristotle. That's not what they are. They're talking about pornography.
Yes.
Because there is a element in our society that wants to have sex with no consequences. And they want to get our kids. So here's what I've been thinking about. You know, a philosopher pointed this out. We have young kids, 12 years old, who think they can consent to puberty blockers, cross-sex hormones, having parts of their body chopped off, you know. How long is it if these 12-year-olds, if they can consent to have their sexual organs cut off, how long before they're saying, well, can't they consent to have sex? How far are we away from that? They're after our children. They don't like family. They don't like marriage. They don't like children. It is an assault on family. It's straight from the devil. It is straight from Satan. It hates families. It loves violence. You know, when's the last time you saw a good debate on a college campus between Israel and, you know, Palestinian? When's the last time you saw a good debate?
Besides the riots and stuff?
Yeah, without the riots.
Without the riots.
But you never see that. There's no debate.
Go back to Bill Maher. Bill Maher, he's a liberal.
Okay? Yeah. Classical liberal, yeah.
But he's the one where you could sit down and have a conversation with.
Yeah.
And say, well, no, what about this? What about this? And you'll come back and say, well, yeah, because of this and that and the other. Whereas the extremes out here are the ones at the campuses, on the streets, and they're fighting, and that's all you see, because the agenda is divide and conquer. I would love to go back to the days of Bill Maher in politics and be able to have a conversation.
And have a debate. You know, that a lot of Notre Dame has its issues, but Notre Dame has always had this debate series. And they don't not only bring on non-Catholics, they bring on atheists every year. Is there a God? Because they want the kids to be able to engage that. But like, did you hear about the Methodists, the United Methodist Church? They just went full-blown LGBTQIA+. And guess what the vote was? Like 500 to 50. So they're total LGBT rainbow.
Well, the Boy Scouts, you see that one?
No.
They officially changed the name to Scout America from the Boy Scouts of America, and they're letting anybody in for whatever reason you want to be in. Totally kills the concept.
They hate gender. They hate men and women. They want us, and they're, all these big groups, they just came. They just came because they want to be inclusive. Mm-hmm. They want to be inclusive. How did we get this far? What was the initial salesman.
Yes.
To be able to make our case. Like, I want to ask, you know what, at the Methodist Church, was there a debate? Get your best guy against their best guy. And let's hear it hash. Debates are what changed me. Debates are what's converted me in many ways. Because if you want to be a Christian, you can't find out every argument against atheism or every... that gets a lot of work. But let's just say you get the top atheist against the top Christian. then you just sit back and watch and see who's most compelling. And someone said that apologetics are very dangerous because you could be convinced the other way, but at least you're putting yourself out there. I've listened to pro-life, pro-choice, Protestant, Catholic, and just to watch the people who are the smartest have a back and forth, but no one wants open debate anymore. When's the last time we had, like in California?
Can you relate that to when people are getting questioned by Congress and they're asked a direct question that gives them the answer, yes or no?
They won't do it.
Because they're afraid of committing themselves in a position that is obviously wrong.
And they stall. Click. Thank you, Senator, for your question. You don't have to thank me. Yes or no? Now, they could say no, and can I explain why? Yes. What we did was, this is yes or no. Did you know that this was said? Did you know that this happened? Yes or no? We try our best to be aware. I mean, all of them, they just dodge and dodge and dodge. And nothing ever gets, and they only have 5 minutes. They always say, listen, I only have 5 minutes. Could you please answer the question? How hard is this? It's just a yes or no. They asked there was that one lady who was in charge of the Better Business or something. Have you ever started a business?
Yeah. Yeah.
We are very careful. I want to know. This is not hard. You know, if I did this with Sister Mary Agnes in the third grade, she would have jacked me up, man. Johnny, what's 2 plus 2?
That's Sister Joan for me.
Oh, yeah.
She's the math teacher.
Sister Harriet. I'd have been like, well, you know, Sister, I think numbers can be creative. What? I mean, I'd have got a note home. I mean, it would be bad.
So in other words, 1 plus 1 doesn't equal 2. It can be whatever you want, so you're not offended.
So, you know, it can, I think we should talk about the justice, you know, of assigning white culture to numbers. They're saying, can you believe that's out there?
Yes.
That's out there. And so, and once, you know, we go back to the abortion issue. You know, Mother Teresa was right. If killing unborn children is not wrong, then nothing's wrong. Then nothing's wrong. The only thing that's wrong now is we don't want to hurt anybody's feelings. We don't want to insult anyone. That became like dogma. We have to make everybody feel safe. Everybody has to feel safe. Why? You know, I remember did you ever play Little League?
Mm-hmm.
You know, the kid in front of me gets hammered by the ball, right? You're like, get up there, John. You're like,
yeah, I know.
You're going, get up there, you're fine.
Go bunt. No way, man.
I mean, I remember that guy winding up. I'm terrified. That thing comes, shoom. Get back in there. Get back in there. Oh, man. But
just think about our fine fighting people, men and women, charging that machine gun nest. Go. It's just, my gosh, it's amazing, the bravery. So you got to get back in there, get back on the horse, get back in the batter's box, charge that hill. You just got to have the internal discipline to do it.
We have to. That's what I think. All the things we were talking about. We don't have to. We don't. You ever heard of what's the old coach of Notre Dame?
That one.
Anyway, he used to say to his team, "We don't have to be the best team in the country. We just have to be the best team in the stadium. We can win this." I think as Christians, if we can disciple men, we don't have to think up everything for every kind of person. You know, have something for everybody. A lot of these churches try to do that. Have something for everybody, which is, I understand. But if we can disciple men, women and children will follow. Women and children will be. Because I mean, we just read the reading from yesterday was the jailer. Remember, the jailer, Paul and Silas are in the... And the thing collapsed,
yep.
And the jailer was going to kill himself. Said, don't do that. We're here. And then he wanted to know about the Lord. And he goes, come to my house. And it says, he and his entire household was baptized.
Men are the leaders.
And so if we can evangelize, disciple men, the other dominoes will fall.
I was reading a book by Tony Evans, who's a book of prayer for men.
I know. I've heard Tony Evans, yeah.
And the publisher allowed me to have 15 chapters I could read on air. So for 15 weeks, I was asking everybody in the audience, especially women, to pray doubly hard for the men, because the men are the leader. That's just the way it is.
Yeah.
And if the man's not right, if the man's not doing what he's supposed to, you have disintegration. Yeah. So hopefully that worked. Continue praying. Continue praying.
Pray for our conversion. And you know, it's even speaking of men. You ever go? They go to these riots or these, and they interview the male men, the guys that were there, and you can tell this guy has issues. You know, well, you skinny soy boys.
You address probably the males.
The males.
They're not men. They're males.
And at one of the universities, finally the fraternity guys came out to protect the flag. And then you got these bone skinny soy boys who, you know, I just feel like we just need to stand up for justice, and we're just here to help. Hey, where's your dad? Did you have a man who taught you how to talk, act, and be a man? We just think we live in a patriarchal system. Not in your house, obviously. Must have been a matriarchal house, or. But thank God for the patriarchy.
Father John, you can go back 20 years and see the difference. Just 20 years go back, what a difference. The last 20 years, society has been destroyed. Satan has had free reign and has caused a lot of problems.
Now, have you seen those? You talk about those Senate hearings. They have all those presidents of universities. They're all women. Have you seen that? Harvard, MIT, Yale, Columbia. It's like, what happened to the men? No, it's all women. And even one of them, I think, was effeminate. But you see what has happened in the attempt to empower.
Well, there's two things, Father John. Yeah. One, the man stepped down from his proper position, mm-hmm. and the woman said, there's a void, I got to take the place. And then there's also the agenda, they want to get rid of men. So you've got the natural element of a guy just not doing what he's supposed to do. So a woman's got, it's like in a family.
Yeah. Right?
The guy's a jerk, you know, a bum, and he leaves, mama's got
to
step up.
And she's not wired to be the dude. And so that's why, and then the boys grow up to be teenagers and they disrespect her. I'm telling you, we don't have to have something for everybody. If we know how to disciple, catechize, evangelize men, we can send them on mission. But it starts in their own small group of their family, because there's that window of opportunity when we were boys, you know, they're 10, 11, 12. A boy wants to be like his dad, wants time with his dad. If a dad misses that, because when we're 16, 17, 18, we're with our friends.
Concrete sets.
Yeah, yeah. And so, but if you miss that opportunity, it's very difficult to get it back.
I think I told you this before. I told my boys, when you're 18, if I didn't do it right, it's done. Foundation set, you're on your own. And my son, when he just turned 18, he was asking me if he could do something. I go, you're on your own. That's it. I've done everything I can possibly do for you to go out there and make the proper decisions at the proper time. If you haven't figured it out now, okay, that's it. So you only got a small window.
Yeah, you prepare your kids for the next step of their life. That's what we do. Prepare kids to move on. Now I have a bunch of people, I have some families in my, you know, older couples that their 35-year-old sons living in their basement, playing video games, has every streaming service. And
tell you what, Father John, keep talking. I want to get the calendar book.
I got my calendar.
Can you tell
us?
It's over there, I think. But I want to.
Oh yeah.
Before we sign off, I want to tell people when you're going to be on the radio.
Okay. Okay.
So,
I am here at St. Luke Catholic Church. We have the most sinners, so we want everybody to feel comfortable with other sinners, including your pastor. So I always say that as priests, like you go to a doctor who's an expert on sickness, we're experts on sin, healing, recovery, and mission.
Got it.
Oh.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to be wrapping this up in just
a minute. Let me get my calendar.
Father John is going to be on the Saturday program on KMIL KRXT May 25th. That's a Saturday. Show's from 9 to 12. He'll be
That's out. Me.
And it's always a great time. We do True Stories of Self-Defense. We have a great conversation with Father John about whatever is on his mind.
What's on my mind?
And I've got questions. We all got questions. So write that down in your calendar book. May 25th.
Okay. Starting at 10. Yeah, that's going to be quite a day. I got a wedding that day. And we have confessions, mass, and then we have a little function for our boy altar servers. No, my life is very interesting, Matthew. I have
never bored, are you?
I am never bored.
Can you please reiterate once again your times here that people...
Yeah, so we have our Sunday services, our weekend services, Saturday night at 5, and then on Sundays it's 8, 11, and 5. We have confessions on Saturdays from 4 to 4:45, and then on Wednesdays today we go from 4 to 6. We specialize in sin on Wednesdays. We remember that Jesus was died on a Friday, but he was betrayed on a Wednesday. So Wednesday's always been a penitential time. But this summer we have so many things for our youth that we got lined up, and I'll be gone for a bunch in July. It's a week in June. I go on vacation next week. So all kinds of things to look forward to. Yeah, and this Sunday is Ascension, and the Sunday after that is Pentecost. So remember the Feast of the Holy Spirit and the beginning of the church. Many things to look forward to.
The Roman Catholic calendar is not a boring calendar. There's always something going on.
We have always someone or something to celebrate. And sometimes we even use food and alcohol. But,
like
you know.
All the time.
No.
All right, Father John, we got to wrap it up. I can't thank you enough. I enjoy it every time we get
together. Oh, thank you.
Have a good time. The people out there enjoy it as well. And so...
keep your powder dry.
God bless you. Keep your powder dry.
Keep your powder dry. You know, wet powder is never a good thing.
Now, here's the other thing, too, ladies and gentlemen. This will be put into podcast form soon. And you can always go to aaronsgunshop.com, go to Podbean, Spotify, Apple, and pull up the podcast. Because we got thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of downloads. So become part of it.
What's a download?
I don't even know. People want to listen.
Oh, okay. That's what...
There it is.
All right. There you have it.
God bless.
God bless. See.